From London, it's the Wired.co.uk podcast, episode 10 for Friday, the 28th of January, 2011. On the show this week, we're exploring the world of home automation and the Internet of Things, where your fridge orders your coffee, your frozen chicken tells you it's partially defrosted, and your oven can send you recipe suggestions. We'll also be talking to the Gadget Show's Susie Perry about her home of the future. Plus,
we believe that the market is at a critical point, and we think that we can take it to the next evolution of the market.
Just what is O2 planning on rolling out to benefit its competitors this year? It's all coming up, but first, it's the Week in Wired News. Hello, I'm Nate Langson, and I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk, and sailing today on the Wired catamaran is senior staff writer Duncan Gear.
Hello.
And, of course, our news editor Olivia Solon.
Hello.
Liv's got the giggles from previous mental image, which hopefully we'll get past very soon. I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
First in the news this week is that Sony has announced the PSP 2, which has, amongst other things, a quad-core processor in a handheld device. They announced this in Tokyo yesterday or this morning, depending on the time zone you're in. And it looks like a pretty neat piece of kit. Duncan, are you interested in the PSP 2?
Only mildly, to be honest. I'm far more interested in sort of mobile gaming at the moment rather than actual handhelds.
You're talking about things like the iPhone, Android.
Android, yeah, that tablets, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm
keen to find out what the new features are that makes it so exciting.
Well, let me tell you what's so exciting about these first things. Firstly, quad-core processor, so four processing cores and with graphics.
Okay, but what does that mean?
What does it mean? Okay, well, it means that instead of having one processor, you've got four
doing the
job of processing.
Is this going to rinse the battery?
I imagine it will. That's the one thing that they didn't come to, and I'll just go over some of the other features this thing's got. So it's got a 5-inch multi-touch OLED display. It's got a gyroscope, an accelerometer, and a digital compass. So that basically gives you the six-axis motion, so it knows basically where it is in space and what way it's even pointing. It's got a front and rear camera. It's got GPS, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. It's got mobile 3G, and it's even got this multi-touch pad on the back. So, you know, like the multi-touch screen on the front, you can pinch and zoom on, like the iPod. It's got one of those on the back.
So you can give it a little tickle.
So you can give it a tickle on the back while you're shooting and killing things with your thumbs on the front. It's crazy. This thing's specced out to hell. I mean, I'm really excited. I don't even know what games are coming out on it particularly. I know that Uncharted's going to be on there. Man, this thing's hot. If you're a gadget nerd, this is gadget porn right here.
Yeah, I don't know. I am a massive gadget nerd, and it isn't sparking that lust in me just yet. But for me, maybe it's more about the games. I'm going to wait and see what's on offer and the kind of franchises that are going to come to it, and especially the sort of original IPs as well. There's also a couple of warning signs that I've spotted already. Typical Sony stuff like making the memory packs proprietary. Tell us a bit about the memory packs.
Yeah, so the memory packs on these, basically, rather than having, say, a disc that's, like a CD-ROM or DVD that you have in an Xbox or a PC, it's a standard format. What Sony's doing, as is typical for Sony, is making one of their own that's only compatible with that one device and nothing else. They did it with the UMD.
Not even other Sony products.
Well, we don't know how much it's going to cost. We do know it's going to come out at the end of the year, though, which just seems incredibly distant, considering Nintendo's just come out with its 3DS, which, frankly, doesn't look as impressive. It looks like more of a gimmick.
Presumably, with the specs that you've just mentioned, it's going to be quite a lot more expensive than the 3DS.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's Sony, so
it is. I mean, it's likely to be around the £300 mark, I would guess.
I'm targeting a slightly different audience as well.
Yeah, definitely a different demographic.
It is, but there will be movies on their download stores, and as you were saying earlier, Duncan, the Android stuff, PS1 games and Android phones.
Sony's planning to bring some original PlayStation 1 games over to Android, which has now got to a point where most of phones that support it have got specs that will do these PS1 games justice.
Well, other things that's been going on this week is O2 has decided to roll out things to benefit people on Orange, T-Mobile, 3 and Vodafone. Duncan, you went to interview O2 about this because it sounds crazy. Give us a rundown. What's it doing?
Well, I spoke to a chap called Gavin Franks, who's the managing director of O2 Wi-Fi. And O2 Wi-Fi is a new proposal that they're putting forward where they're going to double the number of existing Wi-Fi hotspots that O2 users can access around the country. So they're going to open up a pile more hotspots and then make them free for anybody on any network to access.
For absolutely no money at all. So you have to register. And then you can basically, if you're an Orange, you just go into Starbucks or whatever coffee bar or something, log on. But there's a caveat.
Yeah, well, I said you log on. You don't even need to do that once you've set it up, because what it will do is it will grab your device's MAC address, which is a unique identifier for almost every device out there. And what it does then is when you get in within range of the wireless network, it will detect your MAC address. If it's got that in its database, you'll just instantly log on. You don't have to put in a username and password or anything. The flip side of that is O2 knows exactly where you are and when you're there, and they're going to pass that information on to the venues and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, as soon as you walk into, say, Topshop, if Topshop has an O2 hotspot, then you'll suddenly get a text message or a push notification on your phone saying, hey, you know, buy one, get one free on these skirts.
Well, you but could. That's
you
theoretically.
Could opt out of it. But I think that's a brilliant idea. I mean, I think this is like, it's kind of not dissimilar from what Foursquare offers. And, you know, you're getting a service for free. I think people are prepared to receive some kind of communications in return for getting a free service. I think people don't mind that. And I think it's a really good example of a kind of trend which we're seeing where brands are offering, or big companies are offering, services to everybody, and everyone gets a warm feeling about them. So as you mentioned, the Vodafone customers are now going to be looking at O2 in a warmer way, having not really experienced their services perhaps before.
Well, here's the thing that kind of, not bugs me, but is a concern. I'm an O2 customer. I pay for my iPhone, and I also pay separately for a 3G dongle for using my laptop out and about. As part of that, I'm paying to be able to access the cloud, for example, which has deals with O2 to basically provide their service that O2 pays on behalf of its customers because they're paying O2. You asked them about this, and basically, why are they offering things to their competitors for free that I'm paying them for?
Yeah, we've got a clip of that, haven't
we? Yeah, let's play that.
What we're delivering is a service that's incremental to those existing hotspots. So the relationship with the cloud and BT Open Zone will continue. So our customers will have access to those hotspots. So those customers on the tariffs, iPhone tariffs and mobile broadband tariffs, will continue to get access via the cloud and BT Open Zone. This service will be in addition to that, but it will also be available to all of our customers.
Okay, so basically I still get my kind of ad-free service that I've been paying for, but everyone else gets perhaps a sort of ad-laden, promotionally heavy free service.
The more important thing is that O2 doesn't claim that the service is unlimited. There's going to be a fair usage policy, which is 10 gigabytes a month. And that's going to be quite tricky to get around unless you're, you know, handy with a bit of MAC address spoofing.
Liv, tell me about what's new in camels and camel racing.
Camel racing is very popular in the Middle East. And you may or may not know that they used to have young boys as young as 4 who'd be the jockeys. But since about 2003, they've been introducing robots to replace the boys, which whip on the camels and steer them remotely. This week, the news is that a gang has been arrested because they've been found to be putting electric shock devices into robots and trading these internationally, which is against camel racing rules.
This is like something out of an incredibly weird dream. Firstly, there's such a thing as camel racing, and they got rid of the 4-year-old jockeys to replace them with robots. And now there's controversy because the robots are electrocuting the camels. And am I right that apparently the camels were initially scared of the robots and they had to make them look like humans?
Yes, that's correct. It's against Islam to create idols. So that was the kind of worry that they were looking too humanoid. So they were human enough looking, so they didn't freak the camels out, but not human enough that they would be any kind of idol or representation of
this them. Is the most incredible thing that I learned this week.
But these robots are incredible. They're very, very sophisticated now, because obviously they've got to contend with 40 degree heat and the bumpy camel moving at 25 miles per hour. So they have a few processors in them. They've got GPS, they've got heart monitors to check how stressed the camel is, shock absorbers and a whip. And trainers move alongside the camel race with a joystick, a remote control joystick, where they can control which way the whip moves, striking it on different parts of the camel to make it move in different ways, and also tightening and lengthening the reins. And they've got a screen that will show them the camel's heart rate and speed, which is great.
Well, on that note, I think it's time we move on to our feature. The Internet of Things, where every object is connected to a network, where your TV can email you to tell you it's eating power while you're on holiday, and your beef burgers can even tell you how healthy the cow was that it came out of. As we progress ever more towards the ubiquitous networking of dumb objects, the Internet of Things becomes more important to consider today. So, today, we're going to start considering it. The Internet of Things is a really interesting idea because it's sort of something that isn't one product. It's not faster broadband. It's not more capacious Wi-Fi networks or 3G. It's the idea that objects can... They basically know what they are, they know where they've been, and they can tell you. You know, the idea of, say, a DHL package at the moment can... You know, it starts off at a warehouse, it gets delivered to a sorting office, it goes to another sorting office, then it gets put in a van, and then it comes to your house. That is sort of a very early version of what is becoming the Internet of Things, where that object can be tracked. You can go onto a website, it'll tell you where that parcel is, but it only tells you where it's been, not literally where it is. The idea of the Internet of Things would be that that object would actually know where it is and could tell you on what street it is, what speed it's moving at, theoretically under the idea of what the Internet of Things is. So, Liv, why don't you tell us about some of the areas that we could see advancements in sooner rather than later?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a number of areas where we're going to see developments more quickly. And I think one of them is healthcare and kind of sports. I mean, you've already seen things like Nike Plus, where you can track your running and it tells you where you've been, how fast you've gone. But, you know, you can imagine that data being fed into either your gym instructor or having some kind of heart monitor embedded within your clothing and devices that could monitor your blood pressure. That, again, you could have that feeding into your doctor externally so he can keep track of you. Then another area is energy efficiency and inefficiencies in general, like trying to keep something monitoring how much energy or how much lights you're using, how much electricity you're using.
Yeah, so like a real-time monitor of your TV. You could log into some sort of platform essentially and look at what's using the most power in your house while you're away and maybe telling your TV to switch itself off.
Yeah, exactly.
And we saw something similar to that, I remember, not so long ago, where someone, it was a bit of a fun project, he'd set up a robot to water his plant whenever his plant was needing water. And then the plant tweeted, "I have just been watered,"
yeah.
Or I'm not thirsty anymore, thanks. On a weird sort of fun, quirky level.
Internet of plants.
It is, but that's sort of the idea.
One of the aspects of the Internet of Things that interests me is about not necessarily all of these things talking to you, but all of them talking to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the sort of, I guess the...
Systems.
Yeah, the network of it.
The thing-to-thing network as opposed to the thing-to-person network.
Exactly. So, you know, there's the sort of stereotypical example of your fridge knowing that you're running out of milk. But instead of just it knowing that you're running out of milk and emailing you about it, instead of that, it will go off to, I don't know, your shopping bag, and your shopping bag says, yes, there's some space in here. I'll add it to the next delivery that I'm going to get from Tesco, yeah. Automated, and so on. And so it all just sort of happens around you.
Or your alarm
you.
Clock checking
you
your
diary
and waking you up at the right hour accordingly.
Yeah, you don't need to set an alarm. It just knows when you have to be somewhere,
yeah.
Based on, I don't know, either your past habits or all kinds of things. And just being smart about everything.
We're also seeing a lot of advancements now in the ideology of the Internet of Things being brought into cars. The idea of cars basically being able to talk to each other means that if you're on, say, a motorway and there is a congestion, the car at the far end would know that there's a block. It could tell the car behind it. That car could tell the car behind it. Before you know it, you've sort of got this instant communication thread going through all these cars, and everyone knows what's going on. They know that there is a blockage 500 yards ahead, and it will take you X number of minutes to get back there. Maybe your GPS could understand that, and it could say, well, I'm going to take you off this next junction and reroute you around it. Not only is that automated, but it's almost like the traffic jam is also instigating the solution.
Yeah, it behaves as a swarm rather than a series of individuals. Yeah.
Exactly.
It can, you know, it acts in the best interests of everybody in it, not each, you know, car fighting with each other to try and get out in front.
And we're seeing that in GPS at the moment in a weird way anyway. A lot of GPS systems are able to know where traffic jams are, and they can reroute you according to where there is a blockage.
I think what's really interesting is the fact that there's so much data and lots of systems operating in isolation of each other, but it's how those systems then learn to interact with each other. So you have your system of cars with their GPS, and that's interacting with the traffic light system, or if there's a, you know, some kind of water pipe, you know, bursts under the road, the traffic lights change and adapt accordingly immediately without need for human intervention.
These systems, although they can be on the Internet of Things, they could also be on the intranet of things, and you could have your own Internet of Things within your house. And that means devices, manufacturers all have to kind of work together. Duncan, this scares the hell out of you, doesn't it?
It does. I don't trust companies to develop these... I guess, sort of open standards fast enough. I as we were talking about earlier with Sony, I don't believe that Sony is going to build a TV that will talk to your Philips DVD player. You know, I think it'll only be interested in talking to Sony DVD players because then it knows it'll sell you another product more easily. I think there needs to be some kind of standard established way early on that says this is how we're going to do the Internet of Things and this is how devices are going to talk to each other, which is administrated by an external body and that everybody else has to license, kind of in the same way we license 3G and Wi-Fi and so on.
See, I just don't think I realize I can see that kind of starting to happen, but I can just can't see consumers or people just putting up with that. It's just because no one has the same items from all the same range, A. And B, the other problem is about the kind of obsolescence of objects. I mean, things like a fridge you'd normally have for 10 years, but if the kind of web technologies change every, you know, couple of years, you might have to start upgrading your fridge.
We say that, but one of the things that came out of a report that the European Commission did in 2009, which was looking into the Internet of Things, they called it the Internet of Things, an Action Plan for Europe, you know, which shows you how seriously that people are taking this, you know, from a governmental level. And one of the things that they said is that basically all these Internet of Things ideas and these objects all rely on essentially bespoke systems that sit on top of the internet.
And I guess someone's going to come up and create some kind of aggregator hub that would be able to allow any system, whoever developed it, to communicate with each other.
And probably make a lot of money off it.
Yeah.
Probably. The European Commission had a very interesting conclusion. Do you want to hear it? Do you want to hear a conclusion?
I want to hear a conclusion.
Okay, here comes a conclusion.
I love conclusions.
Here comes a conclusion now. So in the Internet of Things, an action plan for Europe, the European Commission said, the Internet of Things is not yet a tangible reality, but rather a prospective vision of a number of technologies that, combined together, could, in the coming 5 to 15 years, drastically modify the way our societies function. This is coming from the government that is basically going to have to oversee and make sure that this stuff works, that all of our concerns, be it privacy, be it data ownership, be it you know, security of personal information, be it proprietary systems not talking to other proprietary systems, it's on their radar, and we're seeing it more and more. And just to give a very quick example of something that people may have, if anyone's used the Find My iPhone service to find their iPhone or iPod Touch or iPad, that is basically a great example of the Internet of Things being here right now and not costing us anything, certainly not anymore since Apple made it free. The idea that your phone knows where it is, it uses a location sensor to find out where it is, and it can tell you if it's lost and where it is and how you can find it.
Can it scream out for help?
Yeah. It actually can. That's, you can make it sound.
It would actually scream, but it would like trigger the ringtone.
It makes
or
a big beeping sound, even
they
if it's on
make
silent.
It scream,
flashes
saying,
a message
help,
on the screen.
I'm being you know, stolen.
It's already here. There's another. Kidnapped. There's a mobile application you can get from National Rail that, unlike the parcel tracking example we gave earlier, what it will do is it will actually show you on a map the position of the train you're waiting for. And I used this at last Christmas when I was waiting for a train in the snow in Stockport. And rather than getting out of my nice warm waiting room into the snow and just looking to see if the train was coming, because I had my music on and couldn't hear the announcement, I could just look at this app and see exactly on a map in real time where my train was as it was moving down the track. All I had to do was look when it entered the vicinity of the Stockport circle, and I got up and got out and my train was pulling in.
There's a bunch of apps on Android that'll let you automate certain features of your device, and it uses the sensors in the phone to do particular things. It basically will let you read in from the sensors of the device. So, for example, from the GPS, so it can work at a location, or from, you know, the ambient light levels and all kinds of things, and then do different things to your phone depending on what those are. So, for example, if your GPS detects that you are in the region of your house, then it can turn on your Wi-Fi automatically for you so that you can connect to your network and then just have it off the rest of the time, saving you battery. It's able to do some really, really smart things.
And this is basically bringing the idea of the Internet of Things into home automation, which is something that's been quite interesting. And there's this Ideal Home show that's put on every year. There's one coming up in March, and they have there this home of the future sort of thing, which is kind of a, you know, look at what great home automation gadgetry is available now and is going to be available soon. So, because we knew we were doing this, I went over and had a chat with Susie Perry, who is one of the hosts on Channel 5's The Gadget Show, because she is apparently the ambassador for this home of the future. I thought that sounded kind of interesting and was on topic. So, let's have a listen to what she had to say.
I think that home technology has been quite slow to jump onto the digital bandwagon. And, you know, people still think of home gadgets as being juicers and coffee machines and stuff like that, which, of course, are all great. But I think we can go one step further now and say that keyless technology is pretty much well and truly with us, biometric entry. But I think what's interesting about the home is that a lot of it will, in the next 12 months, start to be controlled by an iPad. And I think we're going to start to see a lot more companies start to use apps to control things within the home.
Well, there are rumours that the next iPad actually will have the near-field communication chip in it. So it almost like the app, the iPad could have apps for home automation. When you walk into your house, it knows it's you, or at least it knows it's your iPad.
I had a very interesting conversation with a guy on a plane that was delayed. And as soon as I sat down, he went, "It's you off the Gadget Show." And of course, I instantly think, "Oh shit!"
Yeah.
But he turned out to be a very nice guy, very interesting, and he was into biometric technology. And he just installed a house in France with all this keyless technology. And I said, "Yeah, but what if someone comes up and they've got a gun at your head and they chop off your finger and blah blah?" You know, all the questions that you would ask. And there actually are lots of ways that you can install sort of safety within that. Something simple like maybe you just have one other finger that rings the police straight away if you use that hand. Or so I think it's quite interesting. I don't know about you, but I'm always losing my keys. So
on the podcast we've been talking about the Internet of Things, the idea that appliances have IP addresses, they're connected to networks, they know what's, you know, a fridge would know what's in it. Do you think there's an advantage to home appliances all being connected to the internet?
I think within reason there might be an advantage. So, example, ordering stuff, automatically ordering stuff is probably quite a good idea for your basic products. I think Samsung have just bought out a fridge, haven't they, that's got a little LED screen on the front, an 18-inch LED screen, which in a way is quite good. You know, it advertises the fact that you can read the weather. I look out the window, you know, if it's me, but I'm just old-fashioned like that. But I think it's probably good in some ways. If you're in the kitchen, you want to do like a quick check
Angry
on something,
Birds.
Or
it'll
yeah,
be Angry
you got
Birds,
me.
Let's
okay.
be honest. It's going to be Angry
it
Birds.
It is. It's Angry Birds.
You're waiting for a chicken to cook. You play with birds. That's pretty much the way it's going.
I've been harangued for talking about Angry Birds on the Gadget Show as my favourite app because so many people have become more addicted to it. I get abuse every day on Twitter like, "Oh, I can't believe you got me involved with Angry Birds."
Well, here's a competition then. Have you got 3 stars in every level? Just by the way, I have. So.
No, I haven't.
I have.
No one loves a smart ass.
And they do. I do.
So I think within reason, I think what I'm quite excited about is the Fulton innovation stuff, the e-coupled technology. So what I want is a wireless house, actually. That's what I'm really excited about because I can't stand old chargers and wires and everybody's getting their stuff all mixed up, especially when you've got, you know, European plugs and English plugs. It drives me up the wall. So as soon as we can have a worktop that we can just throw everything on out of our bags and they just charge up automatically, double thumb up from me.
So would you be interested then in, say a fridge that knew all the products that you regularly buy because it's connected to, say, you know, Tesco service, and if it knew that it was running low on milk and that you were coming home and it was 6 o'clock and you probably want some tea, it would order milk to make sure that there was milk in your fridge when you got home?
Yes, as long as it's not Tesco and it's Waitrose, but yes.
Of course.
Yes, I think that's a good idea and I think it saves time and it saves drinking black tea, which is horrible.
It is, although black coffee's good, that's what I've got here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really easy to get people to upgrade their mobile phone.
Do you know the only thing, though?
No.
If it went wrong, it would be like the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Sorcerer's Apprentice, remind me. Is that Harry Potter knockoff that was cheap Harry Potter
thing? This is way before Harry Potter, where everything goes wrong and he puts a magic spell on things to clear up for him, but it all just gets out of control and there becomes loads of brooms cleaning and there's loads of water and...
Oh, Fantasia.
You know, like you could have... Yeah, yes.
Fantasia.
But it's based on The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I see. So. How do you get people who are stubborn and don't care about fridges, like me, to want to go out and upgrade their fridge? Because it's kind of boring and fridges last forever. Like my fridge basically contains beer, cheese...
Okay,
and
cheese, right,
stuff.
Here you go. Fisher and Paykel make a cheese. No, they don't. Fisher and Paykel make a fridge. They are the king of fridges, right? Mm-hmm. They make a fridge with a special delicatessen cheese drawer in there. Because I bet the odour comes out especially when you leave it and it goes a little bit mouldy on the corner.
Yeah, mine does.
So, you see, you have your own drawer for your cheese.
Cheese drawer.
That's quite sexy, a cheese drawer.
That's very Waitrose, isn't it? A cheese drawer, a dedicated cheese drawer.
That's
for people who have, like, champagne, containers in their car.
Listen, it is.
Have you ever used a Roomba?
Yes.
You know those ones where the cats ride around on?
Yes.
I need to buy one.
For your cat?
Yeah. Mm. Do you think it's worth buying?
Yeah. Because cat toys are crap, and Roombas are really good, like, little dodgem things, especially if you get a few of them, and you invite the cats in from the local area and have a dodgem session in the lounge.
I've always been thinking of getting one in to review, but really it's to have cats playing with it.
I am pretending that I've done that, but actually I haven't, but I really want to. I can't wait to put my cat on it.
I think you should.
Mm, I think it's a very good idea. I like the Roomba, but it's good.
Let's look sort of 9 or 10 years into the future. You know, we've all got chips under our skin to get into the houses. People are stealing fingers to, like, break and enter. What is kind of the, where is home automation going to be? Like, what is going to be the standard? Like, not me and you with our, you know, biometric doors, but the average person, maybe they've just bought one of those fridges with cheese in it. What are we going to see? What's going to be the sort of de facto standard kitchen appliance that's connected to the net?
In 10 years. Honestly.
Almost honestly.
I don't think it will be massively different to how they are now, but I do think... I mean, you even, like, at B&Q now, you even see that they've jumped on the whole bandwagon of designing things quite nicely because they realise that people want to have nice-looking kitchens that don't fall apart. So I think that small parts of technology will be incorporated, like my charging work surface. I think that will be happening. And you can put stuff on it and it weighs it for you and things like that.
I think that's happened already, in fact. I think there is an oven that knows how heavy the chicken is.
The dear Trish, it's called the intelligent oven. I'm sad that I know that, but yes, it knows how long to cook it for.
So the future's here.
The future's here. It's all around us. You've made me look stupid. No, you haven't. I've done it all on my own.
Susie Perry, Gadget Show, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool, that was Susie Perry. She was so much fun. That was possibly the most fun interview I've ever had. And I had to cut out a lot of laughing because she's a blast. It's good fun. Thanks, Susie. Cool, well, that's our podcast for this week.
You should email us if you've got any thoughts about the Internet of Things and what you think about it.
Yeah, you really should. podcast@wired.co.uk. I make Duncan read every email, so that's good fun there. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, which is @WiredUK for us all. And I'm @NateLangson. Olivia is Olivia_Solon. Again,
correct.
Get the underscore in there. And Duncan is @DuncanGear.
Indeed.
And we'll be back next week with another feature-packed show, I have absolutely no doubt. Duncan, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Looking forward to seeing you again then.
I look forward to seeing you too. Thanks, Liv.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.